Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And I must open with a quick note to those who wrote in who were not happy with the fact that I left the Boston Red Sox off of Curt Schilling's teams that he played for yesterday. I assure you it was not intentional. I know from our Patriots coverage over the years that you probably don't believe that, but I am well aware that Curt Schilling played for the Red Sox and won two World Series with the Red Sox in 04 and 07. Bloody sock, fully aware. So that wasn't exactly the focal point of the story, but he did play for the Red Sox, and they were good while he was there.
Did a little bit, yeah. Kind of made a difference there.
Yeah. Right. On to the good martini now, and we go to Vox. The title is The Smug Style in American Liberalism. This is by a guy named Emmett Renson. He says, there is a smug style in American liberalism. It has been growing these past decades. It is a way of conducting politics predicated on the belief that American life is not divided by moral difference or policy divergence, not really, but by the failure of half the country to know what's good for them. He goes on to talk about how the Democratic Party shifted towards the smug when they lost the working class vote following the FDR years, and by the time Reagan came into office, they were about a third of the getting about a third of the working class vote, and so that left the liberal elites to not only form policy but form the arguments as well. Here is also another good point he makes in the article. Over 20 years, an industry arose to cater to the smug style. It began in humor and culminated for a time in The Daily Show, a program that more than any other thing advanced the idea that liberal orthodoxy was a kind of educated savvy and that its opponents were, before anything else, stupid. The smug liberal found relief in ridiculing them. Later on in the piece, they used the left's reaction to Kim Davis and not just going after her policy position, but her looks and her multiple marriages and suggesting she didn't really know what it meant to be a Christian and all sorts of other things. So Jimmy's absolutely right. No indication that it's going to change anytime soon, but it's good to see there's at least some people who see it on the left.
We talk a lot about the bravery of journalists or something like that. This was actually brave journalism. My hat is off to Emmett Renson for telling the readership of Vox and putting forth an argument to them that this is probably going to have them spitting blood. They are not going to like this. And it's one thing for you or I to say it, Greg, where, you know, but I'm guessing there's not enormous overlap between my readership, your listenership, this podcast listenership, and Vox readers. But, you know, again, this is something that needs to be heard. And by the way, you know, maybe this is something folks on the right need to keep in mind every now and then. But the argument is two segments that summarize it very well. If good politics and good beliefs are just good facts and good tweets, that is, if there is no ideology beyond sensible conclusions drawn from a rational assessment of the world, then there are no moral fights, only lying liars and the stupid rubes who believe them. When Davis was first released from county jail, Mike Huckabee went to meet her, but the smug style sees no true ideology there, no moral threat to contend with, only a huckster and a hick, one to be ridiculed, the other to be refuted. What more, the smug man posts, could there be to say about it? They're idiots. Look, this Onion article nails it, you know. And I just would love to know kind of the background of the genesis of this story, because this is basically saying, Vox readers, you're the problem. And it's brave. It's something they're not going to hear. Now, I don't know if it'll persuade anyone, but the fact that this appears in Vox, probably the one of the publications that most personifies this, is pretty jaw-dropping. I salute them. Look, maybe if they can acknowledge it, then you know, everybody can look at themselves in the mirror a little clearer. And maybe both sides in American politics could be a little more straightforward. We can have a better debate instead of this sneering and this condescension and this belief that there's simply a battle. It's not a battle of left and right. Two different philosophies, two different priorities, two different ideas of what American society ought to be. Instead, it's the smart people versus the dumb people. And what are you going to do about those dumb people?
Yeah. Do you expect it to change anytime soon on a grand scale?
No, but I'm kind of like, we are kind of reaching this critical mass. I remember a couple of months ago, getting together with some conservative blogger friends. We basically just kind of wargamed out the second American Civil War that would basically be, you know, the national divorce. North Carolina would not be allowed to have its own bathroom law. If you were in New York, it bothered you greatly that they dared have different rules than that they rejected federalism, they rejected this idea. And that ultimately there'd be this perception like, no, you can't have a nation of 300 million people run by the dictates of 10 million elites. And I don't think that's going to come to pass. I hope it doesn't come to pass. But I think it would take something like this in which this attempt to be a more respectful public debate to go this way. I'm not expecting it to happen, though. And, the good news is, Greg, you and I are always respectful on this show, and we never, ever make fun of people and mock them, condescend to them.
Never. So the right...
certainly not Patriots fans, Red Sox fans.
The right certainly does engage in that, but I would argue that for the most part, there are certainly some outlets that that might not do this. I think the substance on the right is usually far more consistent than it is on the left, but good to keep that in mind for ourselves as well as we read that. But again, kudos to Vox for actually thinking of that and publishing that. On to the bad martini now, and let's talk about what probably at one point was one of the smallest groups ever in existence. The Friends of Abe has acted as a clandestine club for Hollywood conservatives for more than a decade, hosting secret events where they could vent right-wing views and hear speeches from visiting Tea Party luminaries. But on Thursday, the organization, which counts John Voight, Jerry Bruckheimer, and Kelsey Grammer among its 1,500 members, made an abrupt announcement. It was dissolving. Effective immediately, we are going to begin to wind down the 501c3 organization, bring the sustaining membership dues to an end, and do away with the costly infrastructure and the website, according to the executive director. The announcement caught members by surprise and fueled speculation that infighting over Donald Trump's candidacy, among other factors, had drained commitment. Others said the group had been losing steam for years, Jim. So for the endangered species of Hollywood conservatives, this is probably not a good day. But in some ways, it's also a microcosm of the Republican Party and conservative movement as a whole, and the civil war, if you want to use that term, that's been happening throughout this campaign.
I think this is a depressing martini, Greg, because ultimately, look, this is not a huge group, and it's not like these people are going away. It's not like they're disappearing. But it kind of had been this, for conservatives who feel like pop culture is always in their face and hard left and attacking their values. It felt good to know, oh, there's a group in there. Yeah, we have John Voight, who's, popping up periodically, and Kelsey Grammer and Bruckheimer and all these guys. And, it sounds like they're basically deciding to become a less formal group. People didn't want to pay the dues, and they're going to take down the website and things. But if the report that this ultimately comes down to some of them loving Trump and some of them not, reflecting the division between the larger Republican world, then it indicates that maybe some permanent damage is being done here. I know Voight has been very outspoken in his support of Trump. It seems like most of the Hollywood conservatives or Republicans have been pretty at least open to him, if not in some cases very enthusiastically supporting him. Robert Davi, for example, Johnson from Die Hard. I mean, obviously the really important actors, Greg.
Yes.
If friendships are ending, if a sense of shared purpose is being torn asunder, that's very depressing there. On the one hand, I'm sure everybody is following their heart, following their mind. This is their sense of who they think the best choice is. And, you can see this all over the Republican world of we talk about the divisions in the ranks of Fox News. Certainly folks who have once been very friendly to National Review are now not so much because of the against Trump issue. We got a very big divide here. And things like these attitudes are hardening. And ultimately, you'd like to have a big unified conservative movement instead of a fractured one. And I don't know if there's an easy – I don't think, as I said when in a piece a little while ago, I don't think we hug it out. I think there's been some very big fundamental differences about what the Republican Party is supposed to stand for and what conservatism is exposed by this. And, we're going to have to see how this shakes out. But the outlook for a unified conservatism is not looking very good right now.
Certainly not. Certainly not. And it's just been a bizarre campaign. It's been a bizarre – last stretch of this campaign. At least we don't only have bizarre news in politics, Jim. Yesterday, the news world and the pop culture world was certainly consumed with the sudden death of Prince at the age of 57, found dead at his home in Minnesota. But as the Washington Post reports today, Prince was a little more complicated than a lot of people realized. Back in the 80s and certainly through much of the 90s, he was known for fairly raunchy stuff, both in his lyrics and in his videos, and there was a lot of suggestive material there. But at the same time, right around the turn of the millennium, He became more religious, more spiritual. The article points out he was dabbling in several different things here, from Seventh-day Adventism. Also, later became a Jehovah's Witness, frequently referenced scripture, and also points out that he didn't vote for Barack Obama in 2008, and from everything we can tell, opposed gay marriage, which would probably not have been what you took away from those videos in the 90s. So, complicated yeah. guy with a lot of influence in music, but you learn something new every day.
This is one of those classic, I did not see that coming, news stories. And again, you might argue about, I'm sure there'll be some who'll say, well, he was really overtly Christian. All of the writhing naked women in his videos and his nakedness in the purple bathroom and all that, there's a dispute of that. The idea of him being opposed to gay marriage, people might dispute it. If you've ever heard or Prince in an interview, Donald Trump probably would argue he could speak a little clearer. He spoke in lyrics, and they didn't always make short, concise, Hemingway-esque sentences for clarity. But fascinating to learn this, and I think that much like when David Bowie died earlier this year, a lot of people who you might not have expected to be Prince fans are kind of coming out and saying, yeah, I really liked his music, and I'm really going to miss him. So rest in peace, Prince, the unknown conservative Christian ally we never knew we had. Oh, great.
Jim, it's been an amazing week in a lot of bad ways mostly, but it's been a very eventful week. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.